Tess Vov Teves, Sunday the 27th of December, Rabbi Alex Houle, the missing 168 years.
Firstly, I'd like to thank the organisers for giving me this opportunity to speak at this prestigious gathering. I dedicate this year in memory of my late mother, Rebbetzin Houle, who died on the fifth day of Hanukkah this year, a day which will never be pushed aside by the Shabbos, because Shabbos does not fall on Hanukkah, and therefore this is the fifth night of Hanukkah, and therefore this will be always a candle will be lit on that day. And this is symbolic of the life of my mother, who constantly shed light into the Anglo-Jewish community in her role as a Rebbetzin, disseminating Torah, Yiddishkeit, Taras HaMishpocha throughout London. In this year, I would like to shed some light on perhaps one of the darkest periods in history, in Jewish history, and to shed light perhaps on one of the greatest mysteries and historical dilemmas which we are faced with, and we have had this problem over 1,000 years. Rav Sadia Gaon discussed the problem. The Abar Barnel discussed the problem. The Sefer HaYuchzin discussed the problem. This is a problem, a historical problem, which has hounded Jewish scholars for 1,000 years. The Medrash tells us in the beginning of Bereishis, the Pasuk says, V'ha'oret ha'isosoyu v'voyu v'choshech al p'nei sohoyu. The Medrash tells us, this is referring to the four Goluyos, the four exiles which will Klal Yisrael will go through. Soyu is Golus Bovel. Vovoyu, Golus Modai. V'choshech is the Golus Yovon. Al Pnei Sohoim is the Golus which we experiencing now. In this shiur, in the time which we have, I would like to present a synopsis of the problem, the two sides, the view of Chazal, of Seder Olam, of our Jewish heritage, the view of the secular historians, the chronologists, the ancient historians, the Greek historians, and the evidence that there is today, to bring perhaps to light a misconception concerning the problem, and to ascertain the focal point of the dispute between Jewish history and secular history, to point out the weaknesses in the secular chronology, and finally to bring that would seem compelling evidence to show the veracity of our heritage of the Seder Olam chronology. Let us start with the synopsis of the problem. After the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, there was a period of 70 years. This was Golus Bovel. We know this because it tells us in Novi. This is not contradicted by the secular historians. Generally speaking, anything which is said, which is written down in Nach, is accepted by the secular world. 70 years of Golus Bovel ended by the reconstruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. The second Beis HaMikdash was built by Dayovesh. According to Chazal, he was the son of Esther, born from Achashverosh. Dayovesh, in the secular world, is referred to as Darius. Darius the First, Darius the Great. Dayovesh built the Beis HaMikdash according to everybody. According to Chazal, Dayovesh continued to reign over the Persian Empire, which reigned over the known world, for a further 34 years. At the end of the 34 years, came the rise of Alexander the Great. and the beginning of Golos Yovel. At the end of the 34 years, the second Golos had now finished. Golos Modai had now come to an end and began the period of the Greek Empire. The Greek Empire lasted 180 years. At the end of the Greek Empire, as we all know, was the uprising of the Hasmonaim. The Hasmonaim continued for another 103 years. Then there was Marcus Hordus for another 103 years until the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. The total length of the Beis HaMikdash, Hasheni, is 420 years. Generally speaking, from the beginning of the Greek era to the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, there is also no conflict between secular history and Jewish history. The point of conflict is from the time when the second Beis HaMikdash was built by Dayovish until the beginning of the Greek era. How long was that period? Chazal tell us it was 34 years. At the end of the reign of Darius I, Dayovish, along came Alexander the Great onto the world scene and brought a halt to the Persian Empire. This is the view of Chazal. However, secular history has a different view altogether. Following Darius I, secular historians have determined there was a following seven kings. Seven more Persian kings who reigned over the whole of the known world. This period lasted effectively 168 years until we come to the period of where Chazal tell us where the Greeks took over and were reigning the world. In other words, the dispute between Chazal and secular historians is the length of the Persian Empire. Was it 34 years, or was there a further 168 years until the beginning of the Greek Empire? Chazal give 34 years to make up the 420 years of the second Beis HaMikdash. The 420 years of the second Beis HaMikdash is recorded by Seder Olam, the Tanna Rav Yosi bar Chalafta, who lived in the beginning of the 1st century CE. The view of Seder Olam is brought down in various places in Shas. It's also brought down in the Tosefta. It is taken as absolute certainty in the eyes of Chazal. This also can be viewed by just looking at various unrelated Ma'amorim Shel Chazal. We have a Kabbalah, for example, from Rav Nissim Gaon, and brought down in the Sefer HaKabbalah of the Ravid, that the Nevi'im, Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi, died at the beginning of the Greek Empire. Now we know from Sukkim and Novi that the Nevi'im lived at the time of the reconstruction of the Beis HaMikdash. If there were indeed a further 168 years added on to the 34 years following Darius I, that would mean that the Nevi'im would have had to live over 200 years in order to die at the time of the birth of the Greek Empire. We have no recordings of such longevity for the Anavim, Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi. In the Gemara Brochus, the Gemara says Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was a 10th generation from Ezra. Ezra's father was killed at the time of the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. If the Beis HaMikdash lasted 600 years like the secular historians claim, that would mean that for 10 generations, a father gave birth to a son at the age of 60 years old. This is highly unlikely. If the period is as Seder Olam says, this can be very well understood. Roughly 40 years old, a father gave birth to a son. This can be shown to be exactly, precisely the age of the generations beforehand as well. Till Aranaka. We have a Mishnah in Peah. The Mishnah in Peah tells us that the Zugos, the pairs, received a tradition, a particular tradition from the Nevi'im. The Mishnah tells us in others that the pairs constituted five generations until Hillel, where the Gemara tells us in Shabbos began his rule 100 years before the Beis HaMikdosh HaSheni was destroyed. If the length of the second Beis HaMikdosh was 600 years, roughly, like the secular historians, that would mean it was roughly 500 years from the period of the Nevi'im, which was the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdosh, till the reign of Hillel HaNossi. For five generations to encompass 500 years is practically impossible to even consider. So we see that the view of Jewish history is actually integrated into our heritage. There seems to be no way we can compromise on the length of the second Beis HaMikdosh. Yet, the secular historians have recently, in the last 100 or so years, gathered an immense amount of evidence from seemingly diverse sources, which seem to precisely indicate the dictates of their chronology. Their chronology is actually based on Ptolemy. Ptolemy was a geographical astronomer as well. He had tables, astronomical tables, and he produced a chronology for that period. He actually lived at the same time as Rav Yossi bar Halafta, the Tanna, which authored Seder Olam. His chronology states that from Darius the First, there was another 168 years until the period where roughly where the Greek era began. But the secular historians don't just rely on Ptolemy. In the last 100 or so years, they've dug up all over Mesopotamia hundreds of thousands of clay tablets dated to various kings' reigns through the Babylonian Empire and further through to the Persian Empire. The Persian Empire, there are roughly 1,500 clay tablets dated to the various kings. According to Chazal, it would seem that these kings did not exist. After Darius I, the Persian Empire came to an end. Yet we have these clay tablets, personal documents, heirs, acquisitions. These were written by private people, and they date their documents according to the reigns of the specific Persian kings. How can we claim they did not exist? Throughout Persia, we find ancient palaces where there are inscriptions of the various Persian kings which Ptolemy dictates followed Darius I. Were they all just made up? These are inscriptions which have been established and are authentic inscriptions throughout Persia. Who forged them? Why would anyone on earth forge inscriptions of the king? There are papyri found in ancient Egypt. The Persians ruled over the known world. They ruled over Egypt. In Elephantine, an island near Aswan, they have dug up a series of papyri, actually written by a Jewish colony under the Persian Empire, and they dated their documents according to the Persian kings, the Persian kings that followed Darius. So we have a tremendous bulk of evidence which seems to precisely imply that there was a continuation after Darius I, a continuation of 168 years before the beginning of the Greek Empire. Furthermore, recently, they have found, researchers have found in Babylon, astronomical diaries. Astronomical diaries were diaries written in the times of the Babylonian Empire and the Persian Empire, where the observers, astronomical observers, took observation of the movement of the planets, of the sun, the moon, and the stars, and wrote precisely their places where they were seen and the time when they were seen. And these diaries and observations were dated to an exact date by, with regard to our area of history, the Persian kings, the Babylonian kings. Now, through computer calculated methods, researchers have been able to pinpoint precisely in time when these observations were cited in ancient history. And they have been shown to fit precisely with the chronology of Ptolemy. In other words, before everyone agrees roughly that the Greek era started roughly 300 years before the Common Era, one can see that their ancient observations before those 300 years, which took place in the 200 years beforehand, in those 200 years beforehand, these observations were cited and they were dated by the Persian kings. This would imply that 200 years before the birth of the Greek Empire, there were Persian kings ruling over the world. 200 years before that, there were the Babylonian kings. We have a handful of diaries, also with sightings of the celestial planets. And they also are dated by the Babylonian kings, precisely as according to the dictates of the Ptolemy chronology. So what does one do? On the one hand, we have the sacred veracity of our Jewish heritage. On the other, we have this evidence from diverse sources. However, there is a slight misconception. It would seem, and many have taken on, that the confliction lies in the length of the Persian era. That is to say, Jewish history, Seder Olam, our heritage, denies an extended Persian era. The Persian era lasted for 34 years following Darius I. Then, according to Seder Olam and our heritage, the Greek Empire took over, and that was the end of Persian Empire. However, Chazal do not say that. Chazal do not say that the Persian era did not continue following Darius I. What Chazal tell us, that following Darius I, Alexander the Great, and the beginning of the Greek Empire took place. Eretz Yisrael then became under Greek control and remained so for 180 years. What was happening in the rest of the world, Chazal do not discuss. If we are to accept the diverse sources that indicate that there was an extended Persian era following Darius I, then we must assume that the Persian era continued, albeit in a small form, because most of the world was now under the Greek Empire. But at least in Persia, the Persian Empire may have continued for another 168 or so years. Now, Accordingly, the evidence from the cuneiform documents, the clay tablets, has no bearing on the matter, because Jewish history can accept and accommodate that these kings existed. In the same way, Jewish history does not deny the ancient palaces, the inscriptions. It does not deny that there could be elephantine papyri dated to the Persian kings, because there may well have been Persian kings. However, what the crucial point of confliction between Jewish history and secular history is when did the Persian era take place? According to the secular historians and according to the Ptolemy chronology, the whole of the Persian era took place before the Greek era. That means after Darius I, there continued to be a period of 168 years until the beginning of the Greek era. According to our heritage, following Darius I began the Greek era. At the same time, in Persia, the Persian Empire continued to exist alongside the Greek era. According to Chazal, the Persian Empire was simultaneous in most of its era with the Greek Empire. According to the secular historians, the Persian era was consecutive with the Greek era. First came the Persian era, at the tail end of the Persian era came the Greek era. Alexander the Great, according to the secular historians, did not defeat Darius I. According to the secular historians, Alexander the Great defeated Darius the Last at the tail end of the Persian era. On what basis are the secular historians founded? As we have laid out, Seder Olam and our heritage also accept a lengthy Persian era. But what dictates when was the Persian era? What evidence is there that the Persian era was before the Greek era, as far as the secular historians are concerned? Well, firstly, they're the Greek historians. The Greek historians, who supposedly lived at the time of the Persian era, Herodotus and others, clearly portray a history of the whole of the Persian era coming before the Greek era. There are also the astronomical diaries. These observations of the stars clearly show that the Persian era, the sightings where were dated by the Persian kings, took place in the 200 years before the Greek era, not at the same time as the Greek era. However, Isaac Newton, although he was very famous for his physics, but he also wrote a historical work, and it was printed in the 1700s, and there he makes a history of the world and analyzes all the various peoples and shows that almost every nation of the world lied about their antiquities. And in fact, the Greeks, he said, and he shows, that added 300 years to their antiquities before the reign of Cyrus. They have various reasons to do that, but we can't go in exactly into detail why they do that, because we were talking about the different period in time. But the fact is that it wasn't just the sole nation which did this. This is all the nations of the world did that for various reasons to glorify their antiquity. He shows that the Greeks had no history at all before Cyrus. Everything was written in poetic fiction. History only began from the reign of Cyrus. But even then, from Cyrus onwards, there still wasn't a decent history, because without a chronology, you can't form a decent history. Newton points out there was no chronology throughout the Persian era. Real history only began after Alexander the Great. From Alexander the Great, people started to write down in a chronological form the reigns of kings. He shows that they lied there as well. So, if we're based on the Greek historians, that surely is not a match for our sacred heritage. We have, however, the astronomical diaries. The astronomical diaries, however, researchers have sought the source of these diaries. These diaries actually which Ptolemy used in order to create his king list and the chronology which we have today was based on the tables used in the Alexandrian school, in the Greek school. All astronomical diaries from earlier periods actually passed through the Greek hands. Once the Greeks took over the Persian Empire, all astronomical diaries passed through their hands. So basically, the idea that the Persian era took place before the Greek era is based solely on the Greek version of history. Are the astronomical diaries reliable? What do we know about them? We know about the sightings, we can pinpoint the sightings that there were indeed ancient observations. And we can even pinpoint them to a year. But the dates written on these diaries, who wrote the dates on these diaries? Are they genuine? Are they authentic? Are they copies of earlier? The astronomical diaries, ironically, have a serious problem to them. Because they are so detailed, that leaves the sacred chronology no room to budge even one year. If a single year could be found as a discrepancy in the chronology of the secular historians, that would offshoot the celestial observations and mean that they are false. Let us just throw one flaw in the secular chronology, which would completely negate the authenticity of the astronomical diaries. The Persian Empire ran on a lunar calendar, the same as the Jewish calendar. They had 30 days or 29 days. Based on the sighting of the new moon, the same calendar as we have today. They also had leap years. They added an extra month. In fact, from the beginning of Darius, one can see that they had already established a fixed pattern of leap years. In fact, an identical pattern as we have today. We have today, in order to align the solar calendar with a lunar calendar, one has to place seven leap year months in a series of 19 years. The way we do it is, in the 3rd, the 6th, the 8th, the 11th, the 14th, the 17th and the 19th year of the cycle. These are the 7 leap year months, and this is the particular pattern which can be seen from attested leap years from Xerxes, which is the king following Darius, for 100 years. 100 years we can see from attested leap years that the leap years follows a particular pattern of 3, 6, 8, 11, 14, 17 and 19. What is this based on? 50 attested leap years. They all conform to this pattern. The same pattern is precisely found in the period of Darius, Darius reigned for 34 years. We have a full complement of attested leap years. Exactly the same pattern. The 3, 6, 8, 11, 14, 17 and 19. One problem. At the end of Darius, the last year of Darius was the 12th year in the cycle. The beginning of the next king, Xerxes, one can see that his first year was in the 16th year of the cycle. We have a gap of 3 years. The secular historians cannot accommodate a three-year gap. If you make a three-year gap between Darius and Xerxes, that means you have to push back the whole of the Persian era 3 years. You not only push back the Persian era 3 years, you have to push back the Babylonian era 3 years because the Babylonian era came before the Persian era. That means all the celestial observations would be out by 3 years. Yet here we clearly see from 50 attested leap years that there was a break of 3 years. Another problem, there is no king to reign between Darius and Xerxes. There was no king between Darius and Xerxes. No Greek historian has mentioned any king between the two. Well, if we look at Seder Olam, this is very reasonable that there should be a break of 3 years. Because as Seder Olam tells us, that at the end of the reign of Darius, Alexander the Great defeated Darius. And the Persian Empire came to a halt. Now we know Alexander the Great was killed a few years later. And he split up his kingdom into four. What happened to the Persian era? We're told by Josephus that Alexander the Great was actually a son-in-law of Darius. And he was very disturbed when one of his officers killed Darius. It could be very likely that Alexander the Great granted dominion to Darius' son Xerxes. Not straight away, perhaps 3 years later. And then the Persian Empire continued in a very small form over Persia. This is one of the weaknesses in the secular chronology. But let us now approach evidence. Evidence from the secular sources. Evidence which is accepted universally as authentic, that show precisely the veracity of our heritage, of Seder Olam. It shows that the Persian era took place alongside the Greek era, precisely following the dictates of Seder Olam and our heritage. Recently, researchers dug up an ancient king list. An ancient king list from Uruk. A king list which was not written by the Greeks. It was written before their time. Interestingly enough, it doesn't fit in with the way the Greeks portray history. The Uruk king list brings, on one side, all the kings from the Babylonian Empire, all the way down to Ahasuerus. On the next side of the tablet, the king list continues Darius, Alexander the Great, and the various Seleucid kings following Alexander the Great. What happened to the seven Persian kings which secular history claims followed Ahasuerus, followed Darius? Well, researchers claim, no problem. Evidently, the clay tablet was much longer than we have it, but it got torn away at the bottom, and the seven kings disappeared. And it started on the top of the next page with Darius, the last. Darius the last, Alexander the Great, the following. That's a tremendous coincidence. Seven kings, which Seder Olam say does not exist, actually disappear from the Uri King list. Okay, let's continue. The king list on the second side says Darius, Alexander the Great, following the Greek kings. Who is, but there is a name at the top of the page. Before Darius, there's a name, Nidinbel. Nidinbel. Who's Nidinbel? According to secular history, Alexander the Great defeated Darius the Last. The king before Darius the Last, his name was Arses. He was a Persian king. Nidinbel is distinctly Babylonian. There is no Nidinbel before Darius the Last. But it happens to be there was a Nidinbel before Darius the First. There's a rock in Iraq which tells us how Darius the First came to power. He tells us there was usurper to the throne. His name was Nidinbel. Clearly then, we have a Uruk king list telling us that Alexander the Great followed the Darius who followed Nidinbel, who was the usurper before Darius the First. That means Alexander the Great defeated Darius the First and not Darius the Last. Let's take a look at archaeology. Persian archaeology. According to the secular historians, the Greeks ruled the whole of the world following the Persian Empire. Well, let's go to Persia. Do we find any evidence of Greek rule in Persia throughout their Persian era? Well, we would expect to find inscriptions, palaces, documents. We find almost nothing, or perhaps nothing at all. No evidence of any Seleucids. Why on earth not? According to Seder Olam, this would be perfectly understood. Because the Seleucids, the Greeks, were never in Persia. Following Alexander the Great, authority was given to the Persian Empire to reign over Persia. The Greeks never got there. And that's why there's no evidence in Persia of any Greeks. Let's take Babylon. Babylon, there's thousands of documents, all from the part of the Babylonian era. From the Persian era, there's a drastic drop. From Persian era, there's a drastic drop of documents dating to the Persian kings. In fact, there's a 90% drop of documents from the Persian era in Babylon, indicating something must have happened very drastic at the beginning of the Persian era, throughout the Persian era. Once again, Seder Olam provides the explanation. The Greek era took over very soon after Darius the First, and the whole of the Persian era lost almost complete control over Babylon. And this is reflected by a 90% drop of documents. Egypt. Although we have found ancient papyri in the far south of Egypt, but the rest of Egypt, there's almost nothing, no evidence whatsoever of any Persian control. Why is that? At the Greek period, we find everywhere throughout Egypt hundreds and hundreds of papyri and palaces and temples and engravings of the Greek domain. Yet there's almost nothing of the Persian domain. Once again, taking Seder Olam, that the Persian era was actually alongside the Greek era, they may have had control over the south of Egypt, but the rest of Egypt was under the Greeks. And that's why there's no Persian documentation in Greek. But perhaps the most compelling evidence of all is a series of elephantine papyri, which can precisely determine when the Persian period took place. Did it take place alongside the Greek era or the period before? There are 20 documents, papyri, written under the Persian Empire who were ruling in Egypt, in Aswan, in the south of Egypt. These documents were dated by the Egyptian system, which was a solar system. They were also dated by the king's reigns. They cover about 80 years of the latter Persian era. We can take these documents and plot out the difference in days between each document. We take the first document, let's say, for example, it was written on the 1st of January, and it was written in the first year of King Xerxes. The next document was written in the 10th year of the next king, on the 1st of December. We can just take our solar calendar, a very simple calendar, and we can determine how many days was took place between the first document and the second document. Then we take the second document and we go to the third document. The third document also has a date and the name of a king, and we can determine the days. So we have, as if, 18 stepping stones throughout the Persian era. Fine. What does that give us? This is crucial. Because every one of those documents not only has a solar date, following the solar calendar, but also a Babylonian date, because they were under the Babylonian. But the Babylonian date, as we know, is chaotic, because it's based on the lunar calendar. The lunar calendar chops and changes, either 29 or 30 days. So now, the difference in days between any Jewish date, for example, the 1st of Nisan in 1970, to the 1st of Nisan in 1980 will be a certain amount of days. But the 1st of Nisan in 1980 to the 1st of Nisan in 1990 will not be exactly the same amount of days. It depends on how many 29 days and how many 30 days there were. If we take a broad look at the lunar calendar, basically it oscillates between 1 and 3 days. Any period in history will oscillate between 1 and 3 days. From 1970 to 1980, the 1st of Nisan to the 1st of Nisan will vary between 1 and 3 days. Huadin, similarly, between 1980 and 1990, any period in time. So therefore, if we take the Babylonian dates, we will be able to determine exactly how many days existed between each one of those documents. If we now want to pinpoint the period in time when these documents were written, we have to find the period in time where these stepping stones match precisely with the lunar pattern for that period in time. The chances of any one match is roughly 1 to 3. For 18 times, to find such matching, I don't believe it to be expected from the beginning of creation until the present day. The period set for secular history produces a third matching, a third roughly 1 day out, and a couple 2 days out. This is precisely the kind of matching expected for the wrong period in history. The period set by Seder Olam chronology, the precise period, can show to produce 100% matching. This is incredible. This means that the Persian period took place precisely as Seder Olam dictate. This means that the world history is in serious, serious error. The whole of world history has been pushed back 168 years. Why this was done is due to speculation. However, there are many reasons which can explain why the Greeks may have distorted their own history and Persian history. This perhaps reveals another facet to what Chazal tell us. V'choshech al pnei Yisrael. Choshech zigolus yom. Thank you very much. Thank you.